Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Undiscovered Worlds. I am Ryan. Over there is Maria. And today's topic is going to be all about computers. So, if you guys are just catching the show for one of the first times, basically what we do is we pick a topic or we take one of your suggestions, we scour the internet for all the fun stuff that we can find, put it on a Word document, and then we bring it here to you. And, Mar, what was your experience looking for computer fun stuff?
A lot of things to analyze. I'm kidding.
Oh.
Too many ones and zeros going on there.
Okay. Well, we already know the theme of this episode, guys. Here we go.
No, it's just a lot of fascinating intrinsic things that I didn't know about. So I tried to go with lighter, fun things that I found. And my favorite thing that I want to begin with is actually the term computer bug. To me, this
Okay.
is just so fascinating because computer bug was coined because a moth actually flew into a computer circuit, a circuitry. And after removing the insect, the operator said that they had debugged the computer, and hence the name bug.
So I'm going to add to that just a little bit, guys. This was in 1947. Because I happened to come across the same fact and I found it really interesting also. And it was actually a Harvard Mark II computer. And if you know anything about computers way back then, they weren't housed for the most part. Part of what made the Mac so popular or the early Apple computers is they had a housing and they were put together. Back in those days, you would just have boards out in the open or on stuff so that nothing was really contained the way we contain them now. So a bug got in to the circuitry, and they realized that the computer kept crashing, and they couldn't figure out why the computer kept crashing. But the moth basically interrupted the circuitry, so it couldn't run its processes the way it needed to, so it crashed the computer. So that's what we think of when we think of a virus or a computer bug today, is something that crashes the computer. So the first person to debug a computer literally debugged the computer. I
I just
found
love how
that.
the story was a literal bug. Like it was a literal bug that started all this, and now it's just incredible.
So since we're kind of on this general topic of like viruses and bugs, I want to clear something else up because I think this was the most misleading yet technically true advertising in history, in my opinion. And I remember hearing it for the first time too, and thinking, you don't know anything about computers, they got you on this one. So Mac basically had advertising a while back that said Macs are immune to PC viruses. Technically true, because Macs aren't PCs. PCs,
Exactly.
personal computers, run Windows. Macs can get viruses just like anybody else, but they can't get a PC virus because they don't run Windows. So technically, this statement was true, but they made a whole advertising campaign out of it to make it seem like your computer can't be attacked or planted and pulled information off of, and they use it as a security argument when really it was just a technicality of phrases. And Maria, being the marketing person here, thought she would enjoy that.
By the way, I am giving payments to Pepita because I woke her up right before we recorded this show to go outside to do her math. And so if you see me breaking pieces, is I am paying for her quietness and loyalty. So if you see me kind of
Yes. And if you see her, then you've succeeded in finding, I always forget, we go Ned on this one, finding Ned in the video, because that's actually Pepita, and she's the one that's always hiding in all the previous videos before we switch this over to more of a podcast style.
Yes.
You're up, Mar.
I am. So when you talk about memory, I mean, if you have something that has 8 terabytes, you're like, woohoo. I mean, it's pretty good, especially because you can carry a small 8 terabyte hard drive and you will have a perfect computer. But they actually created a computer memory crystal that can store 360 terabytes of data, which will last approximately 1 million years by using pure silica and storing the data in fifth dimension. I cannot even grasp this whole thing. It's just an incredible amount.
You can grasp, but I bought it over at Best Buy for like $49.99. It was on sale last week. You didn't get one also. I thought I messaged you, told you to get one.
But you're talking about these. This is tiny. This is my Doctor Who case.
Gotcha.
In my fifth dimension.
So
there goes my TARDIS.
There's a lot of things you can do with a computer, obviously. I thought it was interesting that, and I didn't realize this, but it makes sense. If they want to stress test a computer, they actually have it calculate pi. So they're able to, if you guys know, pi is a never-ending number. I mean, it just keeps going and going and going. So if you want to stress test a computer, obviously computers originally were designed to do like simple calculations or complete simple tasks. I mean, there were computers before there were digital computers. Most people don't realize that. So it's anything that can be given a program. We just think of it as giving it a digital program and telling the digital stuff to do something, but you could put in like a punch card and then a mechanical machine can do something. Those are also computers, but for it was established a long time ago to stress test a computer, they would have it calculate pi to see if it was working properly and how well it was working. How fast is it? How, you know, as it moves through the process.
And then they found out that never broke.
Well, I'm sure the older ones.
After the 500th number.
Well, when you feed a punch card into it to give it its program, like the card tears, and then all of a sudden you can't even program the machine.
I did read somewhere, and I don't have it on my sheet, but I did read somewhere that they actually they were able to recreate. And I like that you were explaining that a computer is not necessarily what we define as a computer, but they were able to recreate using Legos a 2,000-year-old machine that was deemed a computer from ancient Egypt. And I was very amazed about that, how they were able to do it with Legos. And remember, they used to use the counting system with the little, I can't remember the name, escapes me right now.
Basically like the beads on the string kind of thing. I can't
think
of
it either. I can't remember the name right now.
That's okay.
That was my fact.
That was your fact. Oh, okay. All right. This will make everybody feel very comfortable and relaxed. The U.S. had to choose a password for its nuclear-tipped missiles back in the day before everybody, you know, was computerizing everything. It was in the early stages. And for it, they made it 8 digits. That way it could be complicated so nobody could ever guess it. And I think the thought process was someone's guarding these things. Like, no one has access to it. They got all the Secret Service. There's just a lot of ways, like, you're not going to get your hands on this thing to begin with. But whoever made the code up was really, really lazy. Because out of their 8 digits they could choose from, they picked 0000. It was all zeros, guys. 8-digit code, all zeros for nuclear launch codes to unlock it to then launch nuclear missiles. Yeah.
The thing is, you will never imagine that will be the code. Like, that's just something you will never imagine.
Yeah, but I'm trying that. Like, if I got to run through codes, I'm going 0000, and then I'm going 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I mean, like, those are like my first two tries to
0000001.
No, my first tries would be all zeros, and then like numbers going up, and then numbers coming down would be my first three tries to, like, if I'm just messing around with something.
Yeah, good idea.
But that's me.
So it was interesting because the first computer programmers were actually women. Ada Lovelace was the first person to publish an algorithm to be executed by the world's first modern computer. And this was in the middle 1800s. And basically, she is given the title of the first person to write a computer program.
And again, like we talked about, it doesn't have to be digital. It's not what we necessarily think of. It's just anything that you can write a program and give to a machine to make it do something. Computers are used to do some pretty amazing things. Now, I want you guys to vote which one of these two things is more amazing. Okay? So basically, NASA put a man on the moon with a computer that had 1/6 the computing power of today's graphic scientific calculators. Put a man on the moon. If you have a scientific calculator today, that's all the computing power they were working with. Put a man on the moon. Or Cancun was founded by the Mexican government using computer models to find a nice place for tourists.
Which one do I think is more impressive?
Yeah, which one's more impressive? I've been to Cancun. I'm going with Cancun. I don't see me ever going to the moon, so I'm picking Cancun. Like, I got a whole tourist town and a beautiful beach and then there's like the second largest reef in the world, like right at the bottom, that goes all the way down to Belize, and I can snorkel. And the moon, I just
it's a whole new world, huh?
Well, but hey, everybody has their own like criteria for like most impressive. Is more what I'm making a point at.
To me, actually, the moon is way more impressive because it is much more scary.
It is.
It's scarier to imagine that you'll send somebody with the power of a calculator. I mean, nowadays with our phones, we get so much out of it. And I just cannot imagine the tenacity that it took. And also because many of these people did calculations themselves.
Yeah.
So they had different computers doing different things to calculate different algorithms as they were doing whatever parables to get to the moon.
So there's two ways of looking at this, guys. What was the more impressive feat, like process? What was the most impressive end result? I went with end result, and to me, having a vacation spot in Cancun is more impressive than a couple dudes putting their feet on the moon, to me, end result-wise, to my life. The process, I would agree with you. I mean, that was pretty daring, but hey.
Well. But speaking of impressive, regardless of what you think is best or what we agree or don't agree, in 1982, Man of the Year was actually, according to Time magazine, the computer was named Man of the Year. 1982.
Which never happened today. Because it'd have to be Person of the Year. Because we don't know what its actual gender would be as a computer. I don't know what made it a Man of the Year. I feel like that's a little unfair. But
remember, the word man was actually a general thing. It wasn't gender specific.
I'm in a sarcastic, snarky mood this episode. So I'm just kind of being that way.
So there. Beeves, do you agree or disagree? She's looking at me like, where's my chicken?
Hey, Mar, you want to take a guess at what a Macquarium is?
A Macquarium.
A Macquarium.
So if I were to guess, I will imagine they turn a computer, Mac computer monitor, the ones with the big, deep ends from the early 2000s, into an aquarium.
Ha-ha, Mar got it. Totally.
Really?
Apparently Macquariums are a thing.
No.
Yes, totally a thing. Totally a thing. And obviously that would void your warranty because it's filled with water. But also,
you think?
Smoking cigarettes near an Apple computer actually voids the warranty. And everybody thought that was ridiculous. And they would try to take their computers in to get it worked on. And they said, well, because of secondhand smoke and everything and all the problems it can cause, that was the argument for the people at the Mac stores and stuff not to work on the computers. And someone had asked Steve Jobs about it. And Steve Jobs actually backed up the policy. And this is one of those many things within your when you agree to these terms. You know, nobody ever reads those things. You're actually agreeing to not smoke near your computer because that voids the warranty, or create any kind of nuclear weapons. Apparently is
you
also
think?
Within that agreement is written in there. But when they asked Steve Jobs about the stuff, I guess according to national health stuff, it's considered a carcinogen. Nicotine is, and he said that we would never ask any of our employees to work with a dangerous substance. So we actually backed up the policy and the employees with that argument.
Oh wow! Okay, more power to them. I actually read somewhere that more gold is recoverable from a ton of personal computers than from 17 tons of gold ore. So our computers have, by the way, don't just dispose of them in the trash. Like, these have to be disposed properly because there's a lot of chemicals that are extremely toxic. Mm-hmm. So same thing with any batteries and things like that. There's a lot of things that could probably be extracted and reused from them. 17 tons of ore.
Okay. So Mark Zuckerberg, the founder of Facebook, went to Harvard. Do you want to guess what his major was, Maria?
Computer science?
It was not computer science. So everybody else out there, I'll give you another
marketing
to take a guess. What do you think Mark Zuckerberg, the founder of Facebook's major was?
The sad thing is I watched the movie that talks about his history in Princeton. He went to Princeton?
Harvard.
Went to Harvard. Sorry, you did say that. Mm-hmm. But there was something about Princeton. Okay. I clearly don't know.
Yes.
Or didn't watch the movie enough.
He actually majored in psychology at Harvard. Now, the catch is you'll read this around the internet. So I had to dig a little further into it. He did major in psychology, but for those of us that have gone to college, whatever you write down as your major doesn't like, okay, now you can no longer take any other classes. So he mostly took computer science classes, but technically his major when he applied was psychology. And sometimes getting into schools is easier if you apply for a less impacted major, which is always ridiculous to me because if you can take whatever classes you want anyway, it doesn't really make a difference. But he entered as a psych major, even though he took mostly computer science classes. So it's kind of a little bit of myth busting because I did read that out there a lot. That he wasn't even a computer science major. It's like, yeah, but that's what he took.
Exactly. And that's how he got in. Which is fine. But when they invented the mouse, I was actually surprised that the name of the mouse before it was called a mouse was XY position indicator for a display system because it moves an XY basically.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yep. Not as fun as saying mouse for sure.
I would not be surprised if it's still called that in Germany to this day. Because seriously, we've joked about this on other shows before, guys. But I spent some time in Austria, and which is right next to Germany, and same language base, and even their insults are practical, like they're very descriptive. Like if you, they don't say you're a wuss, they say you're a shade parker. Like you got to park your car in the shade because you're, or you're a warm showerer. If they want to say that you're kind of a wuss, they would say you're a warm showerer. Like you can't even take. So
bang, you're a warm shower.
The XYZ access, very practical title is still used in Germany. I'm sure it's not. Okay, let's see. I didn't know this. I had to go try it. You guys can try it if you want to. I tried it for you to make sure like nothing like invaded my computer. But basically, it's not possible to create a folder named con, just C-O-N, on a Windows computer. Like if you literally start, open, create a folder, and you type C-O-N, it'll say like invalid entry or something like that. I was like, huh, that's interesting.
Yep, I just tried.
I know you can't use certain icons or certain like exclamation marks because that's part of the coding.
Yeah.
You can't, it doesn't want to read stuff because it doesn't want to confuse it with coding. So you can't use quotes. You got to use the one lines when you name a file. You can't use quotes because quotes are used a lot in the back end computer coding for Windows. This might have something to do with that.
Yeah, because I just tried.
Any computer people out there, tell us why you can't create a file named CON on a computer. You guys probably know.
I'm sure. So something really interesting, like you can have very smart computers doing most of the assortment of work. Like they can actually basically read where the address goes and kind of sort the mail.
Yes.
Although 95% of mail is now sorted by computers. The U.S. Postal Service still has employees who decipher addresses that are too messy for computers to even understand.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So these clerks are expected to process about 1,000 letters an hour. And with words of 20% of them quit within the first 5 weeks.
I mean, if you've ever tried to read a prescription on a medical pad, I would imagine if it's illegible to a computer, that's what you'd be looking at all day. And trying to decipher that at that rate, I do not blame them whatsoever.
There is something interesting about handwriting from doctors, though. There is actually a handwriting that was developed for doctors that looks undecipherable to us, but it's a short writing that actually has meaning. So each little bumpy thingy actually has a meaning, which I was super surprised when I read it. To me, that's almost like computer programming right there.
That's pretty good though, because then that way, if somebody's trying to forge something or gets their hand on a pad, if it's not written, and they don't make them do this, but it would be interesting if they did. It's kind of like their own secret language, and if it's not written in that secret language, then the pharmacist wouldn't give it to you. But that'd be interesting. Let's see. Since IBM's Deep Blue defeated the world chess champion Garry Kasparov in 1997, advances in AI have made chess-playing computers more and more formidable, and no human has beaten a computer in a chess tournament for 16 years as of
Wow.
2022.
Wow. Well, Sanskrit is considered as the mother of all higher languages, Sanskrit. And this is because it's the most precise and therefore suitable language for computer software. So if
Oh,
you're
interesting.
wondering, maybe there's where the con comes from.
I don't know. I don't know. Huh. I always found this interesting. I'm one of those people that likes to read from a piece of paper if I have an option. Now, I'm not going to print it out just to read from a piece of paper. I'll read it on my screen if that's where it's from. But if there's a choice, somebody's like, hey, I've got this book in one hand and this ebook in the other. Which one do you want? I'm like, give me the book book.
Yeah, of course.
But it turns out that people in general read 25% slower from a computer screen or monitor than they do compared to paper.
I wonder why.
Don't
Maybe
know.
our brains are still not that programmed. But I have a
Well,
hack to add to
okay.
that. So it says if you're actually working on a computer, taking notes, if you're at school, taking notes, and you need to study, they actually say change the font to something really weird. Because
Yeah.
studies have actually shown that the uniqueness, that's why handwriting helps us memorize, because our unique way of writing and the location where you put it actually allows for memory. But the uniqueness will make you more likely to remember it. So if you guys are some of the people who like to take notes on the computer and need to learn from it, then choose a weird font, maybe Sanskrit. Let's see how that
Wow. So most of us know that computers just get faster and faster and faster and faster. And it's actually pretty rare these days for anything to be measured in a byte anymore. Sometimes if you like
Not
download,
bite size anymore,
nah.
synonyms.
Sometimes if you download an ebook or something, it might say bytes still, before like megabytes. It's pretty rare to get down to the byte. But obviously there was a development to memory and everything getting larger. So before there was that much memory, there actually needed to be a measurement for half of a byte of data, or because that stuff was actually used back then. You want
Yeah.
to take a guess at what the word for a half of a byte on a computer would be, Maria, or
Sample
everybody out
size.
there. Everybody out there, give it a thought. And Mara, what's your
Sample
guess?
size. Mini bite. Costco
Costco. It's just called Costco, even though the phrase came out well before the company came out. No, Maria, it is called, and you're going to kick yourself for not knowing this, a nibble. It's called a nibble. A nibble is half of a bite, guys. So,
A nibble. Send
yes,
me a
it's a nibble.
nibble. Oh, that is awesome. And in so there was actually the first word spoken over the internet, speaking of nibbles and bytes, was actually LO. It was supposed to be logging, but the computer crashed after the first two letters, so the only thing that got sent was LO.
Okay.
So that goes with your bite size and
Low
nibble.
on memory, we're crashing now. Don't mind us. So this will tell you guys how far things have come. I'm going to share this one, and then Mar, if you got any more fun ones you want to do before we get into, let's see, do we have any? I have a couple quizzes that we have not gotten to yet.
Have a couple of quizzes.
All right. So in 1982, the movie Tron, if you guys remember it, very like computer. Sci-fi, super futuristic. It was not considered for the visual effects Oscar, no matter how impressive it was, because they felt that the filmmakers had cheated by using computers. Now everything that wins the visual effects category was created on a computer. So that'll tell you how far we've come from 1982, where Tron couldn't even get nominated, till now.
And speaking of movies, do you know what the Shrek Law is?
I read
you
this.
Take a guess what a Shrek Law is.
I read this and I don't remember it. And now my brain is just going to want to try to recall it because I read it. So I can't even get like wide enough to like take a guess at it. You guys take your guesses and then Maria will let us know. All right, Mar, what's the answer?
So despite the fact that computer power has increased basically every year, if not every 6 months, each Shrek film takes about twice as many hours to render as the one before it.
Ah, okay.
So DreamWorks calls it the Shrek's Law.
Okay. All right. All right. I got, we probably got time for one or two of these trivia sections here, guys. What? Probably not going to know this. This is pretty obscure knowledge here. But what was the first country in the world with a computerized traffic signal system?
First country in the world with traffic.
Computerized traffic lights.
Not going to be Namibia. It will have to be, I'm going to go with either United States or the UK or Germany.
Or
let's go with Germany.
Or I'm going to go with the United
Ireland.
States or the UK or Germany or.
or yeah.
Canada, Toronto, nah. Canada. First one I've computerized.
Oh, Canada.
Traffic signal systems. Do you have any fun questions, Maria, for the trivia section of our show?
I actually do.
Bring it.
What is another name for the Microsoft Windows tutorial?
Another name for, I don't quite understand the question.
There is a tutorial the Microsoft Windows has. There was a tutorial.
Okay, so another word other than tutorial, basically, is what you're asking for.
Completely. What is the name of the, another name for that tutorial system?
I'm going to call it the Microsoft WTF.
Sorry, I'm trying to grab Peeves, but she
That's
runs
okay.
away.
That's all right.
Okay, I like where you're going with this. Microsoft it's called actually a crash course.
Ah, that's pretty clever. Okay.
Right. I thought that was awesome.
I like it. All right, one last one on my side for trivia. The U.S. Census is done every 10 years, like on the zero. So whatever, 1880, 1890, blah, blah, blah. What year was the first U.S. Census tallied by computer?
Tally by computer. I'm going to go with 2000.
1990. No, you want to go the other direction. Like, it was one of the first things.
2010.
One of the first things gonna done mass by hand that got converted to computer. Like, this was one of the very first.
So things. I will think the hanging chat. Remember, we had that problem with elections, and they went to computers. So it has to be somewhere around 2000, then 2010.
So not like, we're talking tallied. So you could still put in a handwritten vote or whatever, or census. Because you got to remember, census is like people go door to door and get your information. They fill out a piece of paper, but the piece of paper, just like a Scantron test, has like the bars on the side that can then be read by a computer. Mm-hmm. And then the computer tallies the information.
Uh-huh.
So you would know a Scantron test has been around way before the 2000s.
Ever and ever.
They'd be able to do a tally way before the 2000s. I will tell you at least that much. We'll give you another.
Okay, 1980. I'm going to go with that.
1980, all right. It was 1950.
I wasn't going to guess.
You were talking about the first computer programs all the way back in like the 1800s. So I thought
You're right.
It was the UNIVAC system. And in 1952, CBS made computer history by being the first to use that same UNIVAC system to forecast the U.S. presidential elections also. So computers back in the 50s, guys. I hope you enjoyed the episode. We enjoyed doing it with you guys. One of these days, we will have a live chat. Hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. We appreciate you guys joining us, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.